I'll call the work session of the pre-council meeting of the Columbia City Council to order. We do have a couple items on the agenda tonight. The first is open to the public. It's the proposed public engagement process for the American Rescue Plan Act, if any. And the second would be a motion for us to go into closed session to discuss a real estate issue, personnel issues, and hiring and firing issues as well, which we'll do in the other room. Without any objection, we'll just go to the first item of business. Mr. City Manager, anything you'd like to add to the agenda?
Sydney Olson.
All right. So we didn't get much time to discuss any of this last time, so we're just going to jump in because we only have 30 minutes. So last time you guys had requested some information as far as food, transportation, childcare at meetings. We're going to cover some estimated budgets, look at the survey, and then we'll get into what you guys would like to actually get from these meetings. So if you look at the screen I threw together, this is an estimate budget for those things you requested. For transportation, I'm getting that figure. This would be to run buses if we were to have these meetings on bus routes. If you look at the bottom, I just budgeted for two-hour meetings beginning at 6. Obviously, this is adjustable. It would be $456 per hour to run the buses late, which is after 7 p.m. That is including paratransit. For the child care costs, this was an estimate provided from the health department from their community health assessment, where they did some focus groups and provided child care. The second figure you see there is $2 per child per 2 hours of care. So this would be Parks and Rec staff who would be providing care. That is the figure at the ARC. That's typically where they do that. And that would be from 6 months to 10-year-olds. And then if we were to have meetings at other parks and recreation facilities, they would be able to provide care for school-aged children. They said outside of that, we would have to refer to legal if they could do it at non-city entities. And then an interpreter is about $60 per hour. So you can kind of look at these and see what you guys want. While that's loading, last time we talked briefly about doing a survey. I mentioned that this would be available both online. We'd have a landing page on the website, by phone for those who aren't as tech savvy or don't have access, and on paper as well. So I'll show you a preview here. So this was just used, we're using SurveyMonkey, which CVB has the license for. This can all easily be changed. So for this one, we did provide the different areas where the money can be spent. We allow people to rank those areas from importance to them. And then there's an area for free text for them to provide feedback on where they'd like to see the money spent or any other comments they feel would be applicable. And I spoke with Tim Teddy in community development, and he had mentioned the home ARP fund, so he wanted that on there as a separate entity as well. So we provided a place for people to comment below on that as well. So at the last work session, I did get some feedback from people who came out and spoke and some of those who did not. And we did provide you guys with some information about what we heard. And I will say the main theme that I heard was it will be important for us to go to the people and not ask them to come to us. That being said, we didn't get a chance to talk about what you guys wanted to get out of these meetings. And I think in order for us to make this as successful as possible and move forward, it would be nice to know what you guys are looking for from residents as far as we can have people come up with specific project ideas or look at areas on where they think the funding should be spent as well. Yes, or
How much longer do you have? Any other comments?
I can go through real quick some possible meeting formats if you want.
Well, let's have some council discussion first, Mr.
Shorten that.
Just a question to answer your question. What I would be looking for is not so much specific proposals, although I suppose we will hear those, but as of the last time we had the public here, there are themes that bubble to the surface, if you will, and a lot of them at the last meeting had to do with some in the environment, some with the homeless population, gender served, and so on. So I'm looking for that kind of feedback from the public from the perspective of major themes. I think it's also important from my perspective. I'm attracted to the mayor's suggestion that some of this money, and much of this money, although there may be some spent within individual wards, and then you have to deal with equity issues to try and spread that around, it would be a wise thing to do to look for seminal projects or projects that can multiply the amount of dollars that we can contribute, because these are one-time funds, and we will not see the likes of them again, likely, at any time soon. So.
Okay.
So we've had one public input session for about a little over an hour, hour and a half at our previous council meeting. There was some discussion at the end of that as to whether we wanted to have some additional public input sessions, and if so, how that could look or how that could work and how many and where and those. We will, assuming, I mean, all of this American Rescue Plan funds would need to be appropriated, just like any other public dollars that we spent. And if we did that as part of the regular budget process, we would have three additional public hearings as part of the City Council meeting on Monday nights for both old business, then we do an extraordinary old business, and then we have the final vote at the September meeting, all of which has public input involved with it. What additional public input do you think we would need for this round of funds? Fowler.
Thank you, Mayor. So I have a philosophical difference with what Mr. Scala said and what you have proposed, Mayor, in that these dollars in the early language of the American Rescue Plan are appropriate to help people who suffered under COVID and for addressing the longstanding structural inequities that we have in our community. So when I think about those two things, I start with how many people lost family members during COVID? How many people had to bury family members during COVID? How many people are suffering the long-term effects of having contracted COVID and are what I've heard in the press as being long haulers? And what options do they have going forward in attending to their continuing health care needs? When we get to talking about structural inequity in our community, I start with something that we've not been able to touch in all the time that I've been paying attention, and that has to do with our unsheltered homeless and the crisis that I watch on our sidewalks. Every time I drive to the end of my street and turn onto Wilkes, I also am getting an uptick in correspondence from neighborhood associations, small businesses, and I know that you all got the same emails I got about unsheltered people with untreated mental health issues and how disruptive they are in the community. And regardless of whatever anybody's motivation is for bringing that forward, we have a humanitarian crisis unfolding on our streets that has gotten worse because of COVID. And then when I look to the next structural inequity that I've seen in this community in the time that I've lived here, I get to community violence, because that is a symptom of the gap between people who have resources and those who do not. And I think that falls squarely within the language that the Biden administration put into that act or was able to get the sponsors in Congress to do. Given all the years that I have watched the city say we don't have enough funding for that, or it's not within our wheelhouse, or any number of other reasons that previous councils have talked about it, we now have the funding. And we have an opportunity, even with one-time funds spent over 3 to 4 years, to make a real difference in the lives of people who are suffering as a result of COVID. I am not one of them, and neither are most of the middle-income people in the community. Many of us were able to go home and work from our homes and have Amazon deliver everything to our front doorstep or DoorDash or whatever other organizations that were out there that we could pay, and that our lives went on just fine. But we still had people who are mostly low-income workers that went out there and did all kinds of work and put themselves in all kinds of places of mental health stress. And this is the very money that can help them recover from that. So as we go through this process, I'm interested in hearing the stories from family members who lost a family member to COVID, from family members who contracted COVID and have lived with the consequences and the fear of what that did to their families, from the stories of people who had to go and work their grocery store shift or drive the bus or do all of those things and the attendant effect that it had on their lives, and perhaps how much further in the hole financially they are as the result of all of these things. And while I appreciate there's lots of other projects out there that would be nice to have, this money is clearly to help people, and that's how we should spend it.
There'll be a chance for you to make that motion. Any further discussion on the scope and timeline of additional public input meetings? Ms. Peters.
Well, I agree with you, Pat, on a lot of what you've said. The question I think we're discussing now is how many or do we need to have other meetings in specific neighborhoods, or what do we need to do to get more input from people? Because my understanding is that we have the input from people. We need to work to address our unsheltered population. We need to work to all of the things that you have described. Even without knowing their personal stories, we know that people in this community have suffered. But the question is, where do we want to have these meetings? Do we want to have other meetings? Are we able to get the information that we need to make the best decisions we can for the citizens of Columbia based on the surveys that we get, or based on the emails that we get, or based on the phone calls that we get? Or do we need to have meetings? And if so, where do they need to be and how many do we need to have? Are we going to be able to get more information from people? We already know that we need to address community violence, the homelessness, the environment, and public safety. So what are we going to get from having more local meetings, and where do we need to have them to do this, you know, to be the most effective we can be?
So I think that might be a question for Director Browning, who managed the process of working with families and individuals who either contracted COVID or lost a family member to COVID. But I don't want to make assumptions about what people need. I want to hear what they think, given that this is the horror that they went through. I don't want to pretend that I have any particular knowledge about what would assist them, except that I want to give them an opportunity to be heard. And the same with our families that have been affected by community violence. If they want to help us understand their experiences, we need to ask them how they feel comfortable sharing those. And I think Director Browning is probably uniquely qualified and compassionate to help guide those efforts.
Any further discussion? Mr. Pitzer.
And there's also... there's also the feedback, and then there's also the translation of that into policy and into ideas. And I think that we had the work session 2 weeks ago, and there were some themes that came from that were, at least parts of them were aligned with some of the proposals that you had laid out. And I think that there's probably I don't want to assume too much, but there's probably consensus among council to go forward on some of those things. You know, the questions of how much and how it would be operationalized and the detail behind it, I mean, that's a massive undertaking. But there might be elements that we can reach consensus on that we want to move forward with, and then there's a separate process to figure out exactly what that looks like. I think you had proposed maybe two, I don't remember if you had two different shelters or one in your original proposal, addressing homelessness and mental health response. You know, if we decide that that's something we want to move forward with, I mean, we can make that decision at any point. And then, I mean, there's a whole, you know, follow-on that needs to happen that could take months. And there's a lot of partners that need to come together. We need to work with the county to fund it. We need to, you know, work with the state funding that's available, you know, things like that. I mean, we're not going to figure that out with, you know, a finite number of preset meetings. And I'm not sure that, you know, we should be in the details of figuring all that out anyway. So what I'm saying is that there might be things that we already have consensus on. And, you know, is there a better way to, you know, sort of make that decision and move forward with trying to operationalize that?
Any further discussion? Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, I think it's important, Pat, to hear some stories from people. And I like the idea of asking Stephanie and Steve Hollis to help design this process. I do think we need more meetings. I agree, Matt, that we can probably have a two-phase approach. And I would see phase one being part of the budget process this fall, and phase two taking a little longer and a little more thought and a little more community input. It also has occurred to me that another group of individuals or organizations, really, who can help create the forum where we can hear from the people most impacted whom these funds are supposed to assist would be working with the social service agencies like Voluntary Action Center, Central Missouri Community Action, Columbia Housing Authority, who were providing, you know, a very unusually high and difficult level of service during the height of the pandemic, and would probably be able to help us understand the issues and decide how best to respond with these funds that we've been given.
Member Wayne, or anything you want to add?
I'm supportive of having as many opportunities for public input as possible. I do see the merit in hearing people's stories and using those to better inform what we're doing. I'm also supportive of what you provided, presented for the transportation, the interpreter, the childcare, the dinner. I think all of those have to be included in any of the public meetings that we're doing. I don't have great suggestions as to locations, but I am supportive of continually looking for opportunities to get input.
Okay, it'll be easier to determine locations if you guys decide to move forward with those things as well, because we need more room for more people, et cetera.
Dr. Peters.
One of the other things that has occurred to me when Mr. Thomas was speaking was I had this feeling that we needed to have all of these community meetings before the budget in September, but we really don't. We have, I guess, $12 million right now that we can address some of the issues that we see immediately, and then we can certainly have these meetings through the summer or fall or whatever and get more input. So I'm feeling slightly better about that, because I was thinking, how are we going to get this all done and give people a chance to actually give input if they need to.
So, John, give us a sense of your budget timeline. You present the city manager's budget to the end of July.
Correct. By charter, that has to happen.
We have a work session for council. At the end of August. Mm-hmm. We have the budget introduced and first read at the first meeting in August, and we have public hearings on it at the second meeting in August, first meeting in September, and then another public hearing and final vote at the last meeting.
I believe it's introduced the second meeting in August, and that's
first
the first.
Meeting.
Is it the first? It's introduced? Okay.
And then you're correct. And then we hold it open for yep. three more council meetings for public comment.
And I would ask that we don't do, if you go with what she's suggesting as meetings, is we do it after the budget, because we're going to be strapped for time. People want to take vacations. I know Stephanie's got a vacation plan between now and so I would do it after the budget is over.
Do we need to do this $12 million in the budget that we approve for the 1st of October? Or is that money that we can we do the, I mean, the regular budget seems rigorous enough, you know, just to try and make sure we understand that.
But there are also projects that, just like if we're talking about capital improvement or infrastructure or a building, a homeless shelter, whatever it may be, we may want the benefit of that within context of the budget, so that the American Rescue Plan funds are just another line item of, you know, how we have council reserve, general revenue, utilities, utility assistance, whatever it may be. That would just be another funding source that then we use. And again, I go back to, you know, I'm not discouraging public comment. I am trying to put it in context that we're doing this for $12.5 million. $25 million, and yet we're going to pass a $500 million budget with three city council meetings that have always been adequate for that. I'm trying to what I want to do is identify those investments where we can amplify the effect of the $25 million based on the not-for-profit community, if we can match dollars for a homeless shelter, if we can match, you know, other dollars that are happening in other parts of our community, to really get more than $25 million worth of investment or relief, whatever it may be. So, Councilman Fowler.
I have a follow-up question for city staff. Are we comfortable, I know we approved the contracts at the last council meeting, there were six or seven of them to distribute those additional CARES Act funding. Are we comfortable that our agencies and the health department have sufficient resources to help those persons who are struggling right now? The national moratorium on evictions has been extended to the end of July, but the CDC director said that's the last one. And so do we have a way to inquire of Mr. Hollis and Director Browning about whether or not helping people now while we work through this process is that we have sufficient resources for that? I mean, every night somebody goes home without, well, they don't have a home to go to. They're still sleeping on the streets. There's still people that are on the, who are housing insecure, they're food insecure, they're utility insecure. How do we get an answer to that question?
We have enough money to do our jobs currently. Yes, we do have that.
I don't know that that answered the question about whether or not we have.
I have processes and funding to do everything that we've asked you all to do, yes.
Mr. Scallon.
Just a couple comments. First of all, we do have philosophical differences, I think, about this. I don't read the COVID-related aid as only for those who were the most severely impacted. I do think we ought to emphasize that group, no question about it. Those folks who have lost folks and who are homeless and the underserved have been, I think, a source of emphasis for lots of councils for a long time. Sometimes we didn't have sufficient monies. In this case, this may take care of some of that, may relieve some of that. But there are other folks in the community. We represent the entire community, not the ones that you mentioned. Some are more comfortable than others, no question about it. The business community, for one. Here I'm going to be defending the Chamber of Commerce. This is a very strange place for me to be, moving from the left of the council towards the center of the council. But we do represent the entire community. And I do think we need to avail ourselves of some of these funds for those who most need it, no question about it, and that ought to be an emphasis. But we can't leave out the idea that there are projects, there are proposals here that could benefit lots of folks, not the least of which are the first responders and other things that we've used some of these funds in the past to compensate those folks for or catch up to. With respect to the meetings and the public input, I think that's it's very important. When I mentioned some of the experiences we had with the police department when we were talking about community policing, for example, and had some of these meetings and within the various wards usually and at one time with respect to that the three underserved areas which eventually became four and so on. The template was to have these meetings in either places where folks could gather that were community rooms like Hanover, for example, or in some cases some of the schools would avail themselves of some of the space. Most of these had a speaker of sorts to make some sort of framework, but generally speaking, there were just small tables of local residents that would come together to talk about some of their needs. It tended to be very productive. We had meals at those meetings, we had childcare and so on, and we tried to make transportation available. It probably wasn't quite as thorough as what you've presented here in terms of itemizing everything. But those were very successful, and I was a little bit disappointed when we abandoned some of those things. That kind of template, I think, would kind of work. But I just don't want to leave you with the impression that I'm not suggesting that we leave those underserved folks out. They're underserved. They certainly need some of this support and funding. But we have to recognize that this is a one-time funding for those projects that may benefit not only those folks in the long run, but also the rest of the community as well.
You know, we have a item under new business tonight regarding the strategic plan, and city manager also made a good suggestion that, you know, we have a well-executed and thoughtfully engaged strategic plan that guides the city over the next 3 years that includes organizational excellence, safe neighborhoods, reliable infrastructure, inclusive community, resilient economy, that these rescue plan funds could also fit within those five priorities as to how we prioritize their investment within the scope of what's allowed under the federal guidelines as well. You have enough input at this point. I'd like to make a motion that...
I think Sydney had some more slides that I'd quite like to see if we have the time.
No, I actually don't. I wanted your guys' input.
You said you were going to talk about various formats?
I was going to, yes. I think that what you guys explained, we can work off of that. I needed to know if you wanted themes or specific project ideas because that helps determine what style of meeting you have. It's hard to do like focus groups, roundtable style stuff if you're not after a specific outcome. So I think I got what I needed.
So I just want to endorse what Carl said about those community meetings that we had several years ago. They were very productive. There were small groups around individual tables. There were, you know, topics at each table and some kind of facilitation, but it was generally set up so that community members spent most of the time doing the talking and notes were taken.
I'll move that the City Council of the City of Columbia immediately go into closed meeting in Conference Room 1A, 1B of the City Hall to discuss the leasing, purchase, or sale of real estate by a public governmental body where public knowledge of the transaction might adversely affect the legal consideration, therefore, pursuant to Section 610.021, Subsection 2 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, the hiring, firing, disciplining, or promoting of particular employees by a public governmental body where personal information about the employees discussed or recorded pursuant to Section 610.021, Subsection 3 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, and individually identifiable personnel records, performance ratings, or records pertaining to employees or applicants for employment pursuant to Section 610.021, Subsection 13 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri is my motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scala. Mr. Treese votes aye. Ms. Fowler?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
We're in closed session. We'll be back before 7. Up.